Oh, there it is.
That funky beat means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, MailChimp. They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Tuins, 1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The man who once rampaged through San Francisco, destroying everything in his path, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff, and I did it all without ever being seen, so I consider that a successful rampage.
It's a pretty good. Did you see Godzilla this week or no?
Did you?
Oh, yes, I did. I did.
Did anyone?
Didn't care for it. Yeah, no, it opened huge, man.
No, I just meant like you see it more in a Fiat commercial.
I get it. You're making a little jokey joke.
I'm having fun. No, I have not seen the movie. We went on date night, the wife and I, on Friday, but we elected to see Neighbors instead. What a funny movie. Like, will it
hilarious,
change your
right?
life? No. Is it really funny? And is Zac Efron, I mean, he's a star. Like, people, it's easy to write him off as like a High School Musical, just like teeny pop. He's a star. That dude, he's amazing. He's a force on screen, and he's so much fun to watch, and he is so buff.
Yeah, when you say force on screen, you're referring to his abs, right?
Yeah, totally. Definitely his and his eyes, those dreamy eyes.
They fall
it's
into
good movie,
him.
Though. It's funny. It's a funny
anyway,
movie.
This show is not about dreamy leading men. No. It is about video games, board games, and all types of gaming. DLC, of course, stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC stands for Drawing Legendary Comics, because
Whoa. We've
got the Eisner and Harvey Award-winning creator of PvP and Table Titans, a member of one of my favorite things in the world, which is the D&D supergroup Acquisitions Incorporated, the one and only Mr. Scott Kurtz. Welcome, Scott.
Hello. Thank you. And I also am a big Zac Efron fan, and I loved him in the movie where Matthew Perry gets turned young again. What was that called?
13 going on 30?
I don't know. Yeah, we're 13 again. I don't know.
Freaky
There's
Friday part 17.
Yeah. Not the Judge Reinhold one. Not the Dudley Moore one.
That's a trope that could be used revisiting, huh, guys? never gets old, that one.
I'm shocked to hear that there's a Godzilla movie with too much humans and not enough monsters, which is so unlike a Godzilla movie.
Did you see it? Did you see the
I
new
haven't
one?
Yet. I wanted to go see it, but my father had yet to see The Winter Soldier, and we opted to see that a first time for him and a second time for me. Worth
I would
it.
Say that takes priority. Yes, indeed. And I think rumor has it Zac Efron might, in fact, become a Marvel superhero. My money is on Nova, but we shall see.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
All
Rich
right.
Rich Rider Nova?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the rumor. I'm basing that on just pure speculation because I would hate for him to be Daredevil or something really wrong. But
he'd be a great Doctor Strange.
Please, God, no. Save us. Oh, man, this is a huge week of news, not just movie news, not just Zac Efron news. No, it's a huge week of news, which is why we need to get right to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the segment of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that happened this week in the world of gaming. I have to start off right away with a cool announcement. At least I think it's cool. If you are in the Bay Area or traveling to the Bay Area for Memorial Day weekend, and you will be able to go to BayCon, the Bay Area's most Bay-centric con, BayCon, not to be confused with Bacon, the Kevin Bacon tribute convention. I will be there. I will be at BayCon on Sunday. And I will be debuting and reading from an audiobook that I am the narrator for called Traveling in Space. So Sunday, check that out. I will also be participating in another panel that is a tribute to Ray Bradbury. couldn't remember that name for a second. Ray Bradbury, I will be reading at that. I will be reading at the Traveling in Space audiobook panel. So I hope that listeners of this show will make it out and say hi at BayCon. But that's not the biggest news of the week. No, Scott, I'm interested to hear what you think was the most important story this week.
Oh my gosh. I'm torn between, but they're both WotC centric. I was going to say Wizard of the Coast suing Cryptozoic over Hex is the story of the week. But then I found out this morning that D&D next release dates are announced. So,
well, let's do a combo 1-2 punch of WotC news.
You got a bumper for that?
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
1-2 combo of WotC news. 1-2 combo of WotC make it punch.
I love you guys. So tell me about this whole, we'll do negative first and then we'll go positive. So tell me about this whole suing Cryptozoic thing.
So Cryptozoic a while back did a Kickstarter for a collectible card game. I guess it's a digital only collectible card game called Hex. And the thing that excited me about Hex was that it was a card game that was also an MMO.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you'd be like earning loot and kind of building a character throughout the game. But then it turns out, I don't remember what they made in that Kickstarter. It was millions though, right?
Yeah, it was like 2 million. Yeah.
So apparently back in March, WotC has been contacted them and basically said, look guys, not for nothing, but this is an exact duplicate of Magic. And that's not going to fly.
Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards of the Coast. I apologize. Yeah. Creators of Magic the Gathering, whose parent company is Hasbro. I don't know if anybody is aware of that. But, the big news is that they filed a lawsuit a couple days ago against Cryptozoic, saying, basically suing them for creating a ripoff, ripping off their intellectual property. But that they had approached them in March to try to kind of come up with some amicable agreement to change things up so that didn't infringe so much. And what really is interesting is you can't copyright or trademark a game mechanic, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't say, well, cards, it has cards in it or, you know, but, I think the crux of the suit is over, the lore, that there's so many similarities
I think the quote is copied the overall plot, elements, theme, mood, setting, pace, creatures, and sequence of Magic the Gathering and its digital forms, Magic Online and Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers.
It's like identical.
Have you looked at it? Because it really does look very similar to Duels of the Planeswalkers to me. I mean, down to like how the even the board looks and how when you assign cards to block and stuff, it has like the little swooping beam of light between cards. You know, it's very similar.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
It's hard to it's the thing is, I'm not a lawyer, right? So this happens to us all the time on our podcast because we actually have my lawyer and our friend Katie. You know, every time we start to sit down and go, well, you know, this is fair use or this is what her head spins. And I've just learned not to make comments on legal stuff. But, you know, from a layman's point of view, like there's so many different ways to do a card game. I mean, even look at Hearthstone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many people that are not super into games, my dad, my wife, that sat down to play Hearthstone, they go, oh, it's like Magic.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't really play a collectible card game where you have a health pool, a resource pool, and minions you put out without there being a comparison. But clearly there's a way to do it without just ripping it off completely.
Yeah, I wonder where that line is because, you know, you could sit down and go, boy, this Call of Duty sure looks a lot like whatever other shooter. You know, it playing it is pretty much the same as any other shooter. I'm looking at down the barrel of a gun. I'm shooting bad guys dressed in military outfits. Certainly looks like that Wolfenstein 3D that I played back in the 90s. You know, it's like
if only someone on this podcast practice law for like 6 years.
Yeah, who would that be? Christian Spicer, lawyer at large?
No, I am not an attorney. My licenses are inactive. Any advice I give is not legal advice, nor can I represent you in a court of law. There we go.
That's now how I know you're a lawyer. That's how I know, is that you say a disclaimer.
Yeah. I mean, really, and I think, you know, your attorney or your friend is correct. I mean, it really boils down to a lot of facts, and that's what makes law not fun, is the specific nitty-gritty. I mean, I think it's easy to look at something from a top view and be like, this is super similar, but then at a very broad view, everything is similar. So I think what they need to, a large part of it is, aside from the mechanics of the game, which could be, you know, protected as a process or however you want to frame it, the lore, like a story and an idea can't be protected, right? Like that's just whatever. But as you prove specifics more and more and more, but I think people want to see examples of how this is difficult to do. People going after money too, it's usually the other direction, but like the number of times Disney has been sued for like the Lion King was a big one, right? Or that was, I believe it was a Japanese legend or story.
It's Kimba the White Lion.
Yeah, and the cases are difficult to prove. And so there's examples of this out there, but unfortunately, I feel like oftentimes the case in this instance where you have the big company going after the littler company, it's do you have the money to defend it? Because legal stuff is expensive. And so oftentimes if a big company comes, you know, kicks in the swinging doors into the Wild West saloon, you're going to have to go away because you can't afford to fight. And that's an unfortunate reality, I think, of the United States' legal system.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is if you put in to Google search Wizards of the Coast sues, this ain't the first time. A lot of stuff comes up. A lot of stuff comes up. So they, you know, they have been bullish in their pursuit of the trademark for Magic the Gathering and the, you know, trying to maintain some sort of hold on that mechanic. And, you know, I didn't do tons of research, so I don't know how successful they've been in the past, but I know that they've squashed at least a couple of upstarts that have started kind of trying to ape that mechanic. But Cryptozoic, you know, they make pretty big games, and this is certainly one that has at least $2.2 million in Kickstarter behind it. So I have a feeling it will be a bit of a fight.
Well, you know, Cryptozoic is not new to collectible card games. They did the WoW card game.
Right.
They weren't sued over that. So it's, I mean, it's possible to make collectible card games that does not get Wizards of the Coast's attention. There's a ton of them. Netrunner. I mean, there's a lot. The thing that I wish people would remember is that it seems to me that whenever something like this happens, the person or the corporation is not a person. The corporation suing is kind of portrayed to be evil just because they're suing. But I don't think a lot of people understand that trademarks have to be defended. Otherwise they stop being effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when a daycare puts Snow White on the side of it in Minnesota and it comes to Disney's attention, they send a cease and desist and everyone's like, ah, come on, Disney, leave the daycare alone. They can't, because if that sets a precedent, then someone else that has more money that wants to do something bigger mainstream with it will go, well, you let that daycare get away with it. I mean, trademarks have to be defended. The minute something falls,
you must defend this house.
Yeah. So, I mean, it may not even be anything that Wizards of the Coast wants to do, which is why they started talking to him in March about trying to make it not come to a suit. But obviously they weren't able to come to terms. So,
you know, of course, as listeners to the show, you can submit Story of the Week contenders all week long using the hashtag DLCSOTW on Twitter. We got certainly a ton of submissions. And that story that we were just talking about was actually submitted by @Cygrex. Tell me about, well, we're going to talk about D&D next a lot in tabletop time. But I'm curious as to, it looks like the release date is officially August 18th. Is that what we found out
for the player's handbook? Yeah,
for the player's handbook.
They'll stagger them as usual, right? Where they'll do the player's handbook, then they'll do the Dungeon Master's Guide, and then they'll do the Monster Manual.
So it looks like in time for Gen Con, which is good news for all the excited Gen Con attendees, of which I wish I was one. But you're going to be there, right, Scott?
Absolutely. Yeah, we went last year, and we're I don't think we'll ever miss another Gen Con.
So we'll talk about this a little bit more in detail later, but just tell me in general, do you think this is an improvement from fourth edition?
I do. The reason why, fourth edition had a lot of naysayers, but it did its job. I think fourth edition's goal was to try to invite in people that normally have never played Dungeons and Dragons. I certainly saw it happen in my peer groups. Acquisitions Incorporated, the games that we do live at PAX every year, happened because Mike Krahulik, who had somehow managed to grow up and never played Dungeons and Dragons, he was just in a different kind of nerd circle for his age group. And so fourth edition basically kind of came along and said, look, you're familiar with WoW. D&D is just WoW. Look, you've got DPS, you got your tanks, you got your clerics. Here's some cards to remember all your powers. And I think it brought a lot of people into the fold. And D&D Next, because there's been an open play test. You've been able to download it for free. Mm-hmm. D&D Next is a big return back to classic D&D, where fourth edition was more of like everyone kind of gets super powerful by level 10. D&D Next is very much like if you go to the dungeon, maybe you want to hire some henchmen in town, and then because wizards, that you got three spells, and once you cast them, you need a sandwich and you need to rest for an hour before you can cast spells again.
Right.
There's a lot more danger. There's a lot more focus on story, as opposed to statistics. And we have a regular game night. I'm playing tonight, and it's just a ton of fun. And where fourth edition was very tactical, and you really needed to have kind of a map and all your figurines, I think D&D Next, or fifth edition, whatever they're going to call it, is more kind of in your head, in your imagination, more on the table than it is on the table. So I'm a big fan of what they're doing right now. But and I know a lot of people that have said, well, I play Pathfinder because it's more classic D&D.
Right.
I think they're going to like D&D Next.
Yeah, I think Pathfinder's been eating their lunch for the sort of hardcore set for a while. And this might be a way to bring those folks back into the fold. I'm a little torn on it, honestly, because the game that I've been running, and actually have a session tomorrow night, we've been playing fourth edition. And I think it works really well as far as having everything you can do in front of you. You know, it makes it all very clear. It's all right there. You can do this, you can do that, put a check mark beside that when you've used it. You know, it was
right.
It's all there. And as a DM, and a lazy one at that, one who doesn't have tons of extra time to devote to, you know, crafting adventures, I like the fact that if I want to put a monster in, I can just look at this little card that tells me everything I need to know about the monster, and I'm done. You know, so it does have benefits that I enjoy, but I'm very excited to get some more D&D Next time in. I've only played it very briefly, and I feel like they've only released a small portion. There's only a few classes out, right? So I'm hoping there's lots more to come this year as far as options and classes and stuff like that. And storylines. Yeah,
what I've been seeing is like what I've been seeing, and I'm curious what they're going to do when it finally comes out is, you know, they give you the basics, right? Fighter, thief, wizard, cleric. And then you're like, well, what about a paladin? And you're like, well, it's a fighter with a paladin theme to it. You know, right. You just build it that way. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. When you play fourth edition, when you DM fourth edition, do you find the combat goes slow? Do you find that all your players are just like looking at all their cards going,
A little bit, but I think they like that because the reason it goes fast in the other editions is because, oh, I only got one thing to do.
Yeah.
I run up and smack it on the face. Oh, I rolled a low number. I missed. Okay, well, I'll sit around and wait for my turn to come up again. I think my players really enjoy feeling powerful, which having lots of options gives them. You know, it's like, oh my God, I have all these different things that I can do, and I'm only a level 2. You know, it's like, I think that's, they enjoy that.
That's a good point.
And if anybody has not watched any of the live streams of Acquisitions Incorporated, I highly recommend it. Scott is hilarious, and all the other guys are really fun to watch as well. If you've never experienced Dungeons and Dragons, I think it's a great way to check it out, because these guys are hilarious to watch. They have one of the best DMs in the world doing.
Yeah, Chris is the best.
He's so clever and fun and improvisational, which is what you want. All right, Christian, I know we've been talking about tabletop stuff, and there's some huge, huge video gaming news. So tell me what your story of the week is.
One, we're changing the time of this podcast to Tuesday at whenever Microsoft makes their announcements from now on. Cool, Microsoft. cool story, bro. So it's kind of been in the news cycle, in the sped up news cycle now for a while. So listeners to this show have likely heard, you know, some other people jab about it or stuff on the internet, but I still think the Kinect lists Xbox One at $399. While there is a lot of other big news this week, Twitch and YouTube and Halo 5 and Halo 1 through 4 and blah, 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 blah. The biggest one to me is still now on podcasts. I can say Xbox on, Xbox turn off, yes, and not feel bad about it, because no one will have Kinects.
Do you really think that's what will happen?
Yeah, mine is unplugged. There's nothing's going to be developed. Like, so I think that this is a smart move if you don't already own an Xbox One. So the news is June 9th, a version of the Xbox One is going to come out without a Kinect, and it will retail, the MSRP in the United States is $399. So on price parity with the PlayStation 4. I think that this is a smart, if you're a gamer that doesn't have an Xbox One, I think this is something to be excited about, because, you know, your cost of entry is down. But, you know, I typed this in the chat. I mean, I think they're going to change the name of the Xbox One to the Xbox Take Two. Like, I just, it baffles my mind. I know there's been a lot of turnover, but I would love to be 5 years later from now and in Harvard Business School and reading the case study on the development of the Xbox One, like from Vision, what they thought it could be. Was it coming out too early? Like, was the infrastructure not there to support the DRM Xbox on Kinect technology version of this system that they saw, and now they're just backpedaling and playing catch up? I mean, it's 6 months into the system's life, and the Kinect is now a doorstop. Like, all of us early adopters got a free gift of a doorstop.
First of all, every time you keep saying Xbox on and Xbox off, everyone listening to us on the live stream is going nuts because their Xbox is turning on and off.
Yes. But you have to say yes. You have to confirm the off.
But is the Kinect even the issue with whether or not the Xbox One is doing well?
Well, like, I think it's the $100. It's the $100. Well, that's the real thing. I mean, I think there's two ways to look at this. I think there is A, they're in panic mode and are in disarray and don't know what the vision for the box is. And, oh God, what can we do to make this thing cheaper and comparable? Or there's, hey, they're a super responsive company that listens to their consumers and does exactly what people begged them to do. Because what everybody was saying back in November was, why is this thing $100 more expensive? Why are you forcing us to pay $100 for a piece of peripheral that we don't want? Let us buy it either way and let us make the choice. And now that they are doing that, I think the response is, whoa, they're idiots. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. I agree with you, Christian, in the sense that it really marginalizes the Kinect, unfortunately. But the real takeaway is you can't be $100 more expensive than your competitor. That's what I take from it.
Yes, but you can. I think this I think is a similar story to the Wii U, where with the gamepad, which is really cool tech and is a good, really cool big picture idea that I don't think anyone had any real cool ideas on how to actually use or make interesting or to sell it or to translate it to PR speak. And if, you know, I don't know if you listen to the CAG cast with like GBD and Wombat, but they've been talking about on that show for a while about the idea of like what the Kinect needed was a Kinect arcade, something where you can get in like $5 games that show really well on Oprah or the Today Show. And it's like a spot on the store where you go in and download these things like Double Fine's games, things that showcase this tech in a fun, cool way. And they don't have any of that. And so I just question, like, what did they think would make the Kinect a success? What did they think would people would be excited about it on a day-to-day basis? And same for the gamepad, like, you know, this technology's there, but they have no use for it. And you know, Kinect Sports Rivals is kind of the only game that requires it. I think they posted a list of games that won't be compatible with the new version on June 9th. And I think there are, what, 5 or 6 games? It's, I mean, what is this thing? And the voice control is maybe 70% effective, which is pretty great considering maybe Siri's recognition. But it's just, I don't understand what they thought it would be and how it's failed to then live up to that expectation. I think you can have a price difference. You just need to have a compelling argument for that price difference. And I think, while not video games, the biggest argument for that is Apple. The iPad is $200 or $300 more than the Surface, but they have found a way to market it and make it a more compelling piece of software, where now the $299 Surface is regarded as the joke, and the $699 or whatever iPad is the tablet you want. So I don't think price alone is the factor.
No. Listen, it all comes down to the social element. Because here's the problem with the Wii U and the $100 more Xbox with the Kinect, okay? And that is, there's nothing to do on it once you finish Super Mario World or Titanfall. The gamepad is great. If you have a family and your kid wants to keep playing but you want to watch Game of Thrones, the gamepad is invaluable. Same for the PS4 and the Vita. I can't tell you how many friends I have with families that just rave about it. Now, your hardcore gamer doesn't give a crap because it's in his room and he's playing it, or it's in his apartment and he's playing it, and it's just this thing like, why do I want to play it on this when I have my big screen TV? But it all comes down to what you can do on it. My Xbox One I got for my birthday in March, and it was a nonstop Xbox fest until I got tired of Titanfall. And now there's nothing to do on it.
But so what's the compelling argument for the PS4 then?
What's the compelling argument for the PS4?
Why isn't it in the same boat that there's nothing to do on it?
I guess it's hard for me to answer because I've never owned a PlayStation. But my friends that do have them, it all comes down to, is it PlayStation Plus? What's the service where you get a free game every month?
Yeah. Which Xbox Now is doing also with their gold membership. They're going to be giving you free games. What's that called?
Christian, Xbox, do you know? Games for Gold.
Games for gold. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's where the problem is. That's where Xbox is hurting. Because, look, I'm very excited about the new Fantasia game. And when it comes out, I'll be glad I have the Kinect. You know, and I like the voice control. I like being able to broadcast from it. I'll pay the extra $100 if it's a complete system. But if there's nothing to do on the system, the voice control gets boring after a while because that's the most exciting thing on the system. There has to be something to do. Same thing for the Wii U. There's just nothing to do on the Wii U once you finish the new Zelda or the new Mario game.
Yeah. Well, I think that's in line
with what I was saying, though. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I think that that's the case. I mean, you were saying there's no compelling case for the Kinect. I mean, there's very little compelling case for these new boxes at all. You know, you say, well, there's only 5 or so games that don't work with Kinect, or, you know, there's only how many games for these boxes in total. You know, they're in their early stages, and there's really not a ton of reasons to own them yet. And I would argue, my guess is that this E3 is going to prove there's very little reason to own them this calendar year. I think most of E3 is going to be, hey, 2015 is going to be awesome, guys. Hang on for that. I think it's unfortunate that the hue and cry from the consumer base was, we hate all these things that are were what Microsoft were defining the Xbox One as. Because now that they've walked back from that, it really does feel like a console that doesn't have much of an identity. I saw this thing. I tweeted out something this week. I wish I had remembered to put the link in for you guys to look at if you haven't seen it already. But this guy put out a video this week. He has, I think it was 3 different Kinects set up, and he hacked a way to put a 3-dimensional version of himself into software with Oculus Rift so he can walk around.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's super cool.
Amazing, right? Amazing. And yes, that wasn't going to be a consumer product. And yes, he had to use three Kinects, and you know, it was, but that idea of pushing technology forward was something that was exciting to me. And it seems like devs are certainly disinclined to support Kinect now that they don't know for sure that it's going to be on the system. I mean, we saw this week the guys from Harmonix tweeting out all this stuff of like, oh, awesome, our potential user base just got reduced, you know, when we're putting all this time and energy and money into making a game that's Kinect-centric. So that's a bummer. I think that's a big bummer. But I do like that you can buy the box for $100 less. I mean, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's so... I don't know if the Xbox One will sell, have the same numbers as the 360, right? But the 360 has sold, what is it, 90 million units, something like that, approximately. I might be off, give or take 5 or 10 million.
Well, one has sold way more by the same time that the 360 has, you know what I mean? But comparing release to...
But what I'm trying to say is, assume the Xbox One sells 70 to 100 million consoles in its lifetime. With this decision made after they've only sold 5 million, you know, the total number of people that own a Kinect will be like last generation, will just be a small percentage. This is my opinion, a small percentage of total owners, which will marginalize and make those games, you know, a very small percentage of developers looking to support the hardware because of it. And I think last gen, Microsoft was throwing some money around trying to make some, you know, exclusive for Kinect games to justify the inclusion of the hardware. And unless they do something like that again, you know, yeah, what is the incentive for a developer to make a game for 6 million consoles when they can make one for 100 million consoles? And that's what's tough about it. And it puts people in a tough position. Like, I don't know if I would make a Kinect only game, because what's the point of those resources? It's like people get upset when Tomb Raider had multiplayer in it because, oh, they could have made the game better. Well, it's like, why would you want a dev putting any resources into the, you know, marginal Kinect aspect of the game, because who has it and who uses it? And I think that there could be something cool with Kinect, but I don't think Microsoft knows what it is, or Phil doesn't believe in it. Because I mean, you have to believe that these are smart people running companies in the best interest of profitability, and then hopefully some vision in which they're trying to create and do something. But you know, I do feel like sometimes it's the blind leading the blind with some of these consoles, and it's baffling. You know, the course correction, the decisions they made last year at E3. The Kinect was a vital part, a necessary part, and 6 months later, it's nothing. That's
but I mean,
crazy.
But everybody yelled at them for doing that. I mean, I don't understand how the same people that can complain about Kinect being forced on them will be the ones that complain that Kinect is removed from the equation. It's like they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. Scott, let me ask you this question:
people.
As somebody that has an Xbox One, do you feel like you feel cheated at all? Do you feel that you should have been able to buy this originally? Or do you feel like you spent $100 extra when you, I mean, I know you got it for your birthday, but,
still,
how do you feel?
Yeah. I'm disappointed. They're saying, well, you can buy it without the Kinect, because what I would like to see, and I'm a different gamer than most, okay, because I'm not necessarily interested in I'm more of a social gamer, so I'm not as excited about the next Call of Duty because I want to play Call of Duty. But if all of my friends were getting on Splinter Cell and they're like, Kurtz, you got to get on, we're having so much fun, I'll go buy Splinter Cell because I want to have a good time. But I'm much more interested in things like, I got to see the Fantasia game, and the whole idea of being a conductor and using the Kinect and having this kind of innovative, interactive game was exciting to me because Disney was behind it. It's a brand I like. Fantasia's really cool. Now I'm Mickey on the Mountain, but I'm doing it to Queen music, and it's really innovative and fun. The demo was really sold me, and I thought, wow, if more people are making games like this, it could be really interesting. Because for me, with the 360, the Kinect was the thing you bought because your wife wanted to do the exercise games, or you know, your kids want to do the dance game,
right?
And then that was pretty much what it was for. It's like the Kinect to me felt like the Wii Fit, you know?
Well, but it was a direct response to that kind of tech, I think.
Sure. But I mean, I'm more disappointed that maybe this is a kind of an edict from Microsoft saying, well, you know, maybe we're not. So maybe developing for the Kinect is not as far as we want to go, the direction we want to go.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, it's the same thing with the what was the is the Kinectimals, the animal one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I was over at a friend's house and his kid was running around his house with his virtual dog. And if that's all the Kinect is ever going to be, then what's the point of it? It's kind of like a proof of concept.
Yeah. I mean, I should also mention how many people submitted this story. This was submitted by tons of people using that hashtag DLCSOTW at Steve Gameware, at Arhole, at Tamgo, at Trimbigs, lots of people. So it's a big deal for people. I think for me, the big question is going to be this E3. We see this announcement happening before E3 so that it's not the story coming out of the press conference. If they had announced it at the press conference, that would be the headline at the press conference. So clearly they don't want that to be the headline. But it'll be interesting to me if any of the games they show at their press conference use Kinect in any way. That would be a real telltale sign of whether they are literally just abandoning this tech or if they're trying to give options to the consumer.
But I do prefer a company. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I prefer a company like Apple that just tells me what I'm getting with a direct vision, right? Like Apple says, oh, guess what? It's Lightning connectors now from now on. Everyone goes, no. And they go, shut up. It's Lightning.
Yeah.
And it's because that's where we're going. Oh, remember FireWire? Remember how awesome it was? Oh, yeah, man. Stuff is transferring so fast. Yeah, we're done with it. What? We're done with it. Move on. This is what you get now and you want it. I do want it. Oh, my God. I do want this.
You like you know? The abusive relationship. You want to be
it's like,
beaten into
yes,
submission.
Okay. So if Microsoft is like, no, the Kinect is the future. Like, yes, okay, I'm in. Yeah, everything's voice controlled. I'm fine. Hey, guess what? Just hold the bar up to the thing and say Kinect, redeem code, and then code redeems. That's kind of dumb. You're getting it. It's happening. That's the way from now on. Okay, I'm in. And then it's like, well, maybe we don't need it. What?
Yeah,
I bought into it for you.
It's easy to make Apple. It's like, yeah, they force this stuff on you, but you know, they've been very successful. So you can hold them out as an example, but you know, kudos to them for having the fire behind their conviction to stand by a vision to do something. And you know, whether or not that flame will burn out eventually because of that, they'll run into that same problem. Maybe. Whereas, yeah, Xbox, it feels like, you know, Phil comes in and takes over and it has totally changed things. And I mean, I almost feel like if they could, they would release a new console entirely, right? Because it's just like, well, we devoted these resources for Kinect and now we're the technically, you know, less powerful system because we were trying to get this, and now they're sitting in this position where it's crazy. But I want to ask you, Jeff, put on your prediction hat. E3 2016, E3 maybe 2015, year, 2 years out. In the United States, two questions. In the United States and worldwide, will the Xbox One be selling more units than the PlayStation 4 in 1 or 2 years' time?
You mean overall or month to month?
Let's say overall, or you know, like we can either whichever you want. But I guess I was thinking more overall.
I feel like the die is cast at this point. I feel like it's going to be a tight race. I don't think either one of these companies is going to lag behind, but as they didn't last generation. But I do think the PS4 is a clear leader and feels the more coherent system and sort of message at this point. And I would be surprised if that changes. And now if there are some really significant titles announced, I mean, I think Halo will be a big deal, and we'll talk about that in a second. And if, you know, if these Xbox Live specific television shows really take off, maybe that will be a differentiator that will help them gain some ground. I would be surprised if it really makes them overtake the leader at this point. But I think it will be a very close race. There's lots of more Microsoft news we got to get to. But first, I have to thank our sponsor, MailChimp. MailChimp.com. means easy email newsletters. MailChimp helps you design email newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate them with services you already use, and track your results. So if you need to speak to a lot of people all at once, MailChimp is your place to go. It's like your own personal publishing platform. You get to customize your newsletter sign up to match your brand. You can share your sign up on your website and your Facebook page. You can collect signups from an iPad or a laptop, and you can even import existing email lists no matter the format. Personalize what your subscriber sees, including sign-up forms and confirmation emails. And there's never been a better time to try MailChimp with their entrepreneur plan, if you consider yourself one. If you have under 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever. Just visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. We hope you check out MailChimp because they help make this show possible. So alongside this announcement with the Kinect, which, you know, unfortunately allowed a lot of companies or a lot of websites to use the headline disconnecting the Xbox One. They also announced that Xbox Live no longer requires Gold service for streaming apps, which is pretty good news for people that don't want to pay for Gold. That was submitted by @CyberGK. So this is stuff like Netflix, HBO Go, Univision Deportes, MLB TV, NBA Game Time, all the stuff that lets you watch TV, now they don't charge you twice, which I think is a good move. So kudos on that, right, Christian? At least we can kudos them on that.
That's great, I think. And if you have a Gold subscription, when this change goes into effect, you can get a refund if you want to cancel your Gold and you have extra time left. Like if you had Gold only because you wanted to watch the excellent Arrow on the CW or Netflix, you can get money back. That's a very nice thing that Microsoft did not have to do.
Yeah. So what's Gold for now? Just multiplayer gaming?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. And it also gets you those, you know, games for Gold, and they're adding value in other ways as well. But yeah, it's pretty much for multiplayer gaming, which makes it pretty much on par with what PS Plus has turned into. There are very few differences now between those two services.
Well, that's smart. That's needed for Microsoft to compete at all.
Yeah.
What I'm really shocked about is, I mean, obviously, you know, people forget how much bandwidth we're all taking up doing all this amazing stuff, and someone has to pay for it. And so paying to do multiplayer gaming makes sense because, well, it's a lot of bandwidth. But with Netflix being like 30% of all traffic on the internet, I'm shocked that everyone lets you stream Netflix for free, all this net neutrality stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, that's too, a whole other road to go down. But yeah, it doesn't look like that's going to last much longer. They're going to start charging for the fast lane unless something happens.
I mean, that should be Netflix's. That should be your cost to Netflix. I don't think another company should layer their own fees on top of that.
No, I think they had to do this because everything else streams it for free, right?
Yeah, everything else does stream it. I mean, well, it's not that it's streaming it for free. It's that it's a layer of, hey, just using my Xbox to use these services, I have to be paying Microsoft. That doesn't make much sense. And it didn't make much sense. And now it makes more sense because they're not doing it. So I think this is a past due kind of situation. It should have happened long before now, but I'm glad it happened. I actually want to go to the phones before we go on to anything else, because I want to get people's reaction to this Microsoft stuff. If you are listening live, the phone number is 512-518-5714. We have a few people on the line now. I got somebody calling from 607. Tell me your name. Tell me where you're calling from, and tell me your reaction to the Kinect-less Xbox One. Oh, you're on an airplane, evidently.
Oh, am I? Sorry, I didn't realize I'd make noise. hopefully you guys can hear me okay.
Yep.
So, hey, my name is Jeff. I'm from Rochester, New York. So for the Kinectless thing, I think going Kinectless might be a mistake, in that, you know, a lot of people and I were saying that it's just kind of a less powerful PlayStation 4 now. I think what they should have done, which might have been a better move for them, was to just do a straight up price cut of like $50 throw in maybe 3 months of Xbox Live Gold, which gets you into the Games for Gold program, and then maybe throw in a free Kinect Sports Rivals or something like that. I think that would be a much better value proposition than a PS4, because, you know, even buying a PS4, then you still have to buy a $60 game to actually use it as well. But
you're saying double down on that.
You kind of wonder, since now they're cutting out the Kinect too, how long do you think it's going to be before they offer a version that has no HDMI in?
Well, that's an interesting idea. To really just completely stripping out any differentiator. I don't see that happening, honestly. I think that's an integral part of the system, and I don't think it adds any cost to their manufacturing. The interesting point that you're bringing up is that they did not absorb any of that cost cut, or at least it doesn't seem so. It seems that they cut off the thing that cost them $100 extra to make and pass that savings along to you, rather than saying, hey, we'll eat $50, give you some games, give you some stuff. I think it's an interesting idea of you saying, well, double down on Kinect and say, hey, give you Kinect Sports Rivals, really show you that this is something that we're want to be associated with. But that's not the direction that they went. And I think that they are distancing themselves from it more.
Hmm? I wonder if they stealth tried that with, I wonder if some of those price cuts or discounts you saw at retailers for the Titanfall bundle, you know, if some of those were Microsoft authorized and they were seeing, will this move? Because, I mean, there was a time, I think it was only a couple of hours, but you could get an Xbox One with Titanfall or Forza 5 from Amazon for $399. And I wonder if they were seeing if that was tracking movement. Or I think for a while there was the, you know, the $450 bundles at a lot of stores for the Titanfall bundle. And that was a free game, a Kinect, and I think it came with a 30-day trial of Live. I could be wrong because I have an OG Xbox One. But, you know, I wonder if they were tracking some of that stuff and seeing if that would be enough. And then the other side of it is, yes, Microsoft is a big company, but the games division or the Xbox division, do they have that kind of money to lose on each system? Can they afford to do that?
Right, right. The other big Microsoft news this week is Halo 5 Guardians coming out this fall. Nope, not this fall. Fall 2015. So, yes, 2015, the year when these consoles will have awesome stuff on them. we got the logo, we got the title, we got the fact that it's going to be 60 frames per second with dedicated servers for multiplayer. We got promises of a new engine and larger scope and, oh, next gen. Scott, are you excited for Halo 5 Guardians?
I think I'm more excited for Destiny.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly coming sooner.
Yeah, and I'm curious how that will affect, I guess the Halo bros will always want Halo. But yeah, I'm really excited about, I think I'm really excited about Destiny. I wonder if I'm getting burnt out on Halo, but, I'm excited about it. I'm not excited it's going to be fall of next year, but, I want to play all of it so badly. One of the things I was really excited about with the Xbox One is I thought there'd be the new Halo right away. And it's not that I'm not enjoying Titanfall, because I'm enjoying the hell out of it. But I can't believe we have to wait another whole year for it.
How crazy would that be? I mean, is it even possible with new tech and getting devs up and running? But yeah, like imagine how crazy that would have been if Microsoft was like, the Xbox One comes out, you know, whenever, or the Xbox Two, whatever they call the next one, the Xbox 720 comes out November 5th, 2018 with Halo 7 day one. Boom. I mean, like, drop that Mario 64 launch title. Like, swing at it. I mean, Infamous, I think, was supposed to be a day and date launch title for the PlayStation 4, and I think that would have been a pretty big one. But, like, is it, I don't know, because I don't develop games, is it that hard to do to have that big marquee title be a day one game? Or Titanfall. If Titanfall came out the same day as the Xbox One, that'd be crazy.
I think that would just guarantee that those games would be sort of crappy. I think the days are gone when you can have a Mario 64 launching with your system, because they'll wait to launch the system until the game's done. I think it's more like, no, we're launching the system on this day and the game better be done. And oh, you guys have a shortened window and oh, the game's probably going to be crappy. I mean, that's why most launch titles aren't that great. It's because they've decided they were launch titles and they don't have the breathing room to make them great most of the time.
And so they're protecting their valuable IPs from being part of that. I mean, it's not as if they couldn't do another Halo 2 years later, you know, or something like that, right? Or another X game, whatever they want to call it.
I think as a consumer, I much more prefer the idea that make the great games great and I'll wait for them rather than try to, you know, give me the 1-2 punch of a new system. As exciting as that may be, I'd rather them be great. Scott, sure. What do you think?
You know, I think that if you're talking about a company that also makes, you know, first party games, obviously, I mean, I guess there's marketing behind it, right? Because if what launched with the Wii U, Zombie U,
yeah, and a whole bunch of
Mario
stuff.
U,
yeah,
they had an okay launch. I feel like
I seem to feel like when the Wii U came out, I had a lot more to do on it than the Xbox One. I was frankly shocked that Xbox One launched with Titanfall and not a new Halo, since Microsoft is producing it. But there might be some logic behind what you're saying, Jeff, because let Titanfall take the hit, right? Let Titanfall launch with it and take the risk. And then when we learn from that, then we launch Halo and it's amazing.
Yeah, we're also in this period where these games are so expensive to create that even in the entire first year of a new console's launch, and even with the great sales that both of these consoles have had, there's still not the user base there to justify the expense. You know, their ROI is not going to get recouped. You're seeing all these games that are coming out this calendar year being cross-platform, being cross-generational. Even Far Cry 4, which was announced this week officially, coming out November 18th, coming out on PS4, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PS3 also. You know, it's hard for these gigantic IPs with incredible budgets to make their money back this early in a new console's life cycle.
It's true. One of the first games I played on my Xbox One was importing over my save from Black Flag, Assassin's Creed,
mm-hmm.
and finishing it up on the Xbox One. And you just stick the disc in and the graphics are even better. So,
yeah. My story of the week, though, although I'm tempted to go with this Kinectless Xbox, which was kind of a big deal, but something really happened just in the last day, which could have huge ramifications, and that was submitted by @SpaceBob and @RalphArmonGeek. This notion that YouTube is in talks to purchase Twitch for $1 billion. Another week, another Twitch story. It seems like Twitch is dominating the news, but now we know it's worth $1 billion with a B, which translates to $22 for every person that watches Twitch. So my question to you guys is, what are you doing with your $22?
Getting out of Twitch because YouTube is going to shut it down because it's going to be full of copyright infringement.
Hilarious. What do you think this could mean, Scott? Do you watch Twitch or do you participate with Twitch in any way?
I do. In fact, I'm looking forward to participating a lot more. I'm getting a brand new gaming rig in the next couple weeks. And I had planned to set up a regular Table Titans streaming night. I was really looking forward to getting into a regular night where my audience can watch us play games. And the idea that you could even maybe monetize that. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who I call them the new professional poker players. Like, you always have that one friend that he's a professional poker player and you're like, all right, you got to grow up sometime, pal.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of friends now that are professional Twitch players. Like, they play League of Legends and they earn money. You know, they eat ramen out of a bong, but they make their living from playing League of Legends on Twitch. And I'm watching a lot of Hearthstone streams. Yeah. And it was just kind of interesting to see that it's all built in. The gaming rig that I'm purchasing has a video card specifically designed to help me output to a Twitch stream. It's built, awesome. It's baked into the card.
And let's be honest, there are some fantastic Bong ramen recipes, right?
Look.
So, I mean, this could be a lifestyle choice for a lot of people.
You get by however you can, right?
DLC does not condone the use of potentially illegal drugs, depending on where you live, but we do condone the use of using drug paraphernalia for eating ramen.
Yeah. If every bong you're using to eat ramen is one less bong someone can use to do an illegal drug.
That's why
think
I used
about
to
it
cook,
that way.
I used to cook everything using a lighter and a spoon. So
one piece of chicken at a time.
I'll never be invited to do this show again. But I got the bong joke in, so that's what's important. No, I don't know that I'd be excited or scared about this because I was very much looking forward to because as a kind of new media guy that you know, with my web comics and podcasts, I was really looking forward to seeing, you know, what kind of an audience and maybe revenue stream and just fun experience we could do with Twitch. And
is this a bad news for that? This could be good news for that, right?
I hope it's good news.
It could make it easier. What if now anything you Twitch stream automatically gets archived on YouTube? That's kind of neat. No?
I think it would be great for it to have more resources behind it. I think that I'm wondering if maybe it's not a better revenue stream than anyone realized if YouTube's interested.
Why would it being archived on YouTube, Jeff, be an exciting thing for you versus now where it's archived on Twitch? Is because a broader audience might stumble across it? I mean, I don't think, you know, YouTube is so full of content already, as is Twitch, which is a much younger service. Mm-hmm. I don't know if adding... having it archived on YouTube is better than having it archived on Twitch. I think I agree with Scott, like, you know, more resources and making Twitch, you know, bigger, better, badder, you know, more hard, whatever Cliffy B said for Gears of War 2, you know, could be awesome. But I think there are a lot of potential justifiable worries that people have, like the copyright claim. It seems weird that, you know, people try to put up their Let's Plays on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nintendo's like, we'll let you leave them up, but we get the money. We get the ad revenue. And YouTube's constantly changing their ad share split. And even for large channels, you know, a lot of people were leaving because they were getting their fair share. And it's like this weird world, right, where companies have put in millions and billions and so much money into making these things available. And then they're allowing you to make money off of their system. And then when they change that, people make their livelihood doing this. And I think that YouTube integration could be scary for a lot of people that have found a very successful way in Twitch. And I think the hope would be that YouTube will make it broader and more accessible. Or maybe YouTube is interested in Twitch's streaming capability. I mean, YouTube does YouTube Live through Hangouts and stuff like that. But maybe Twitch has better code and that's kind of what they're interested in. Like, I don't know if you guys watch Silicon Valley, but maybe Google and YouTube see something in Twitch's code that is like, oh, these idiots just have a game streaming service. They have no idea,
right?
The kernel of code that's in here. We'll pay them $1 billion and they'll think they're getting a great deal. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you know, that's, I mean, like I said, the computer I'm buying has a graphics card in it with a specific chip on it designed to help me stream to Twitch. You know, so maybe there is like a compression algorithm that YouTube's interested in, and that's all they care. Maybe Twitch has grown to a point where it's getting crushed under its own demand. It doesn't have the infrastructure. But I don't know. I'm a little scared. I like the idea of competition as opposed to everything just gets to a certain size and then one of three companies buys it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's kind of the way, where we are. People are creating things to be acquired.
And YouTube has been known to screw over Let's Players. I mean, it's happened.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. This is not a done deal. It is not. They have not signed any papers, but it's certainly something to watch. Something else to watch is the hype train. Hype train! That's your cue to say choo-choo, Christian. Come on.
Choo-choo. Choo-choo.
E3 hype train.
I got to record Estelle saying it. Man, we rode a train at the Travel Time Museum here in Los Angeles. Dude, my daughter's the cutest, you guys. She's so, choo-choo. So cute. The only reason I pitched Hype Train as a segment is just so I could do my impression of her saying choo-choo on a podcast.
Well, mission accomplished.
Yep, let's move on.
What's your E3 Hype Train? We're doing that all the way leading up to every week leading up to E3. So what's your question for us this week, Christian?
Well, some of the stuff is funny and silly. So one, I need to have some, I created a pretty good list of questions and Jeff, you were giving me a hard time about it. And one of these questions we could have done last week is, will Microsoft announce the end of gold required for video services?
Yeah, you nailed it.
We could have been so smart last week instead.
Well, guess what? I asked you which question you wanted to do and you didn't pick that one.
That's true. So this makes sense, especially who knows what Sony's going to announce tomorrow, i.e. The light bar is gone from the DualShock 4, whatever the big news that comes out as soon as we stop recording this show. Will there be any megaton surprises at this year's E3, or will leaks ruin everything? Leaks or pre-announcement. So, you know, a leak I would consider Project Beast as a pretty substantial leak, or just getting out of the way things like gold, you know, services, a video service streaming coming out early. Do you think there will be any megaton, big, bombastic, where did that come from, I'm so hyped surprises at this year's E3 from the major players?
What do you think, Scott?
Oh, you're asking the wrong guy. I feel out of my league here.
Well, that's okay. We can go to the phones. I wanted to find out if the listeners have anything that they think might be a megaton. We have somebody on the line from 850. What's your name? Where you're calling from? And will there be a quote-unquote megaton?
It seems like a number of publishers are planning for that. Why else announce stuff this early if they think they have something bigger that they might talk about? Then again, it's also possible publishers are realizing that if they announce it early, they get an entire news cycle to themselves, which is better than the all of 10 minutes they would get at E3.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think that's why we're seeing quote unquote leaks, is so that the noise of E3 can be, you know, you can have your own little bit of glory before that noise overtakes everything. And, you know, your announcement gets muffled with everybody else's announcements. That's ridiculous. What do you think, Christian? Megatons or mega yawns?
I'm optimistic. Trademark. I'm optimistic for a megaton.
As you are every year, as we should all be every year. But how often does it happen? Almost never.
Very rarely. I'm going to say there will be a surprise that gets people hyped up. Will it be a megaton? I don't know. It might be the type of explosion that, as long as you're in a fridge from the 1950s, you'll survive no matter how far that fridge gets flown through the air. But I think there's going to be something. And yes, if you dig down, maybe it was already leaked somewhere. But, you know, Last Guardian, I think there is going to be something. And I don't think it's going to be anything that comes out anytime soon, or maybe ever. It might be BioShock on the Vita type announcement, right? But I believe there's going to be a quasi megaton announcement. That's
quasi megaton confirmed.
I was shocked at how little was announced at PAX East. I was working the show, and then, you know, once I got home, I was like, I'm going to go see what was announced, and it was very little.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I thought, well, maybe they're saving it for E3, but I don't know, man.
Well, I think if there's any year where there could be a megaton, this would be a good contender for a year, because we don't know tons of stuff that's in the works for these new consoles, and this is when a lot of those things are sort of at a stage where you can show me something. That's not going to be out until fall of 2015 or, you know,
coming
whatever.
2020.
Yeah. Again. It'll be announced for fall 2015 to be subsequently pushed into Q1 2016.
Yeah, the Division. Look how awesome the Division looks, coming out eventually, maybe. Yeah.
Well, you know, stuff takes a long time to make and to make good. So I think the chances are good we'll see something big. And I'm certainly hopeful as well. All right, let's move on from the hype train to, thank you, the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Thanks again to Sean Madigan for making that awesome bumper music. Scott, what's on your playlist? What have you been playing?
I have been playing a couple things. First of all, I can't stop playing Hearthstone, although I probably should. Because I feel like it's just got me on this cycle where they keep me hooked just long enough for me to decide maybe I'll just spend some money on some cards or arenas.
Well, you were if I remember from Twitter, you were a little skeptical about hopping on the Hearthstone bandwagon. Were you not?
Yes and no, because at some point I loved it at first, and then I got to where I was constructing decks and it just became this weird cycle of what is the progression here? Mm-hmm. Because I want to play, I want to win occasionally. But my choices are to, you know, just do the dailies and try to play arenas to get more cards and be a collector, right? And try to collect all the cards.
Yeah.
Or to try to get up high in the ranks. And that means learning the metagame. And I just don't know when I go online or listen to podcasts and listen to how to, you know, play the metagame, how to build good decks. I don't know how these guys are getting their cards. I just don't know. I don't know how these guys are getting their cards other than just spending a ton of money.
Well, that's an interesting question. There was an interesting editorial on Polygon, I think last week or the week before, that had me contemplating, especially in light of the Twitter exchange you and I had, which is this idea of, is Hearthstone pay to win? Do you feel like it is pay to win, first of all? Do you feel compelled to pay money? Because I have forced myself to stick to a no pay philosophy to see how far I could go. But I'm certainly tempted a lot.
I think that pay to win should, with Hearthstone, is more pay to win at first, because there's diminishing returns. And I think the Polygon article talks about this.
Yeah, it was written by Daniel Friedman. I should credit him for that as well.
Because once everybody has the cards, it's really about what's being thrown up against you, right? I mean, if everyone in the rank system is playing zoo decks, then you need, and it's an aggro deck, then you need to control the board, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. Once everyone has all the cards, it's just like, here's a good example, is when you play ranked, if you're playing in the middle of the end of the month, you can easily get up to maybe, you know, rank 16 through 14 without too much trouble. But when the month starts over, when everyone gets knocked back to 25, if you play at the beginning of the month, it's just brutal.
Yeah. Yes.
Because everyone that's got these amazing decks that has all these rare cards, I mean, they're right at the same rank as you.
My eyes are up here. Quit looking at my decks, you guys.
That's quite a Ragnaros you got there. honestly, I think that you could spend, and I've watched YouTube videos of someone spending $200 and just unpacking a ton of cards. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people disenchant everything that they have to build one solid class,
right,
to compete. And I just think that gets you just so far. I've spent money. I think I've spent about $60. I figure you'd spend about $60 for a game. And if I'm going to play the game for more than a month, I can spend $60 for it. So I spent $60. I got some decent cards. One I disenchanted to help with my Paladin deck. I got Illidan, so I kept him. And then I did the rest to make dust and build some cards. I built a Leroy and used him in a deck a couple times. I just don't know how much money you would have to spend to actually win consistently to call it a pay to win game.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how often do you win? And then Jeff, I've given up on the game. I think it's fun, but once it became people got really good, and I don't want to play a game. I gave up for some reason. Like, fighting games passed me by. Where, like, now I need to study strategy, go online, read about how to build my deck, or spend tons of time figuring it out for myself. And I don't have that time. I don't want to spend that time on this game anymore. But I'm curious for you guys, like, how often are you winning? I know it's smart what they do, and Jeff, we've talked about this before, the way they don't track losses. But, like, what do you feel like your win loss is? Do you guys feel like you're winning enough to keep you coming back without paying more than you know, $60 for you, Scott, or Jeff, you just, you know, grinding away for the free gold?
Well, I've gotten to the point that I always wished I could be with a first-person shooter multiplayer game. The thing that everyone always said with Call of Duty or whatever is you just have to get into that zen place where if you get killed, you just respawn and keep going, and you don't. There's no emotional investment. And for me, that's, I love the playing so much that if I'm losing, I don't mind conceding and moving on to the next game. I don't mind playing it out and getting to the end and having it be really tight and losing and moving on to the next game. And the loop that I've gotten into, I'm curious, Scott, it sounds like you're playing a lot of ranked. I'm playing a fair amount of ranked, but the loop that I've gotten into that I've found to be super fun is grind gold up to 150 and then get right into the arena. Because in the arena, I think it's the great equalizer. It's, I have the option to get a whole bunch of cards that I don't actually own. And that to me is really fun, is the charge of how long can I keep winning before I lose three games, and how good was this deck that I just by chance drafted. That's my fun loop. But are you playing more ranked stuff, Scott?
I stopped playing the arena because I think that people who play the arena figured it out. Like, there's a math to it, right? Someone figured out the math.
I don't want to believe that.
here's the thing, okay? Because I was excited about the arena. We're equal footing. Constructed decks is going to be way too hard to compete with people that have done the math and they know what to build and they know what to hit and they're following the metagame. But the arena is just like playing a Magic tournament where you go and you draft, you know, right, or you buy two starter decks and who knows what the other guy got.
Right.
And it's equal footing. But I am when I started to learn the math of the arena deck, right? When I started to, in my head, go, well, I'll take this card because these two do nothing. And I'm not spending a lot of time figuring it out, which means that everyone else is that really is into playing is spending a lot of time figuring it out. When I stopped actually performing well in the arenas, when it's three losses and I'm out, I'd rather just spend the 150 on a pack of gold of cards.
Is that a bad thing though? Sorry, real quick with figuring out the math, because I feel like, you know, Jeff, you brought up the analogy of the first person shooter. I mean, that's kind of like someone, you know, that you figure out a level, right? And like, oh, I'm not going to go onto that roof anymore because, well, it looks like a good vantage point, blah, 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 blah. Like, people figure out how to play the game. Isn't that what's happening in the arena? That people have figured out how to play it properly.
Yeah, but I also don't think you're running into those players every time. You know, I don't know. I don't feel that. I don't have a sense of that.
I'm having a hard time in the arenas, and it fluctuates. The thing I'm enjoying with the constructed deck is I'm the jerk that when it comes to football season, I just like a good game. You know, I it's only
like
since
that
I moved
Seahawks
to Seattle
49ers game. That was just a good game.
Stop it.
Jeff is very passionate about, Jeff is just like my brother, Brian, except where Jeff is excited about the 49ers. My brother's excited about the Cowboys. Like, you just can't talk to him. It's like he just, his brain shuts off and he's just a force of nature when the Cowboys start playing. And he and I will get into
arguments.
If only the
Cowboys had players that were like that.
Yeah, if only. But I like, I'm like my mom where it's just like, oh, they tried so hard. You know, I just want a good game. So when I'm playing in Hearthstone and I have a constructed deck and I'm playing with someone and it gets to a close game and I lose, but I say well played and he says well played and it was a close game, I don't mind the loss.
Yeah.
But when there's no way to compete because he's got all the legendaries and he's playing a bunch of BS cards. And it's just, and then he does the other guy does the thing where it's like, all right, well, he got me. And instead of taking me out, he plays every damn card he has and then waits until the rope comes down. I want to kill myself.
Just concede. Just concede.
See, the problem with conceding is that I played a game one time against a priest deck where he was being a jerk and he was playing every card and he healed Drew himself into a loss.
So you think it could happen
because could my happen. Rule now is never quit because you never know. They get cocky
He put out every card deck. That was an actual priest, and they were just letting you know.
See, that's I want to introduce on this show. I really want to, because there's so many stories like that. I want to do stories of glories and tales of fails. You know, like I want, because there are so many wonderful stories.
Your stories of glories, and I'll play again, and I'll just be all the tales of fails.
Hey, man, if that's how it works out, I believe me. I have plenty of tales of fails. But I'd love to have listeners send in. You can send in emails to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. If you want to send in stories of glories or tales of fails, like this week I tweeted out one where I just got lucky. I was playing Paladin and I just threw down a Loot Hoarder, which is this 2/1, you know, 2 attack, 1 health card. That's when it dies, it gives you, let you draw a card. It's basically there to just get one hit in and get you another card in your deck. But I happen to have Blessing of Kings, which is a +4/+4. And so I buffed it right away. Just like, okay, well, you know, maybe we'll see how this goes. And then I had a Sunwell Cleric and buffed it again. And I literally, the only attack that I had was this stupid Loot Hoarder that I kept buffing. And I won the game just only attacking with the Loot Hoarder. And it was such a fun, like, weird one-off crazy situation that I love those stories of just like, well, I'll just try this weird thing because I don't care if it doesn't work. I can just move on to the next game. Unless I'm in the arena where now I'm like, this is for all the marbles. I got to keep this one going. Because right now my current arena match, I have 5 wins and no losses. And I'm like terrified to keep playing. Like I can't handle the pressure. I got to keep the streak going. You know, just and same retire. With ranked games. You know, if you have this ranked streak going, I'm like, oh, I don't want to mess it up. Anyway.
The game's also buggy as hell.
That is true. I've noticed a lot of like hovering cards and weird stuff. Yeah.
Well, frustrating, I don't know if you've ever played an arena where you step away from it. You play 2 and then you step away. But yeah. I've lost arenas. I've had friends lose arenas. I've been playing. Oh, don't play an arena game on your iPad, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Because if that thing crashes to the home screen, that's a loss. So,
man.
But I'm looking forward to the adventure mode. I'm looking forward to see what. It's very early in its life cycle. This game could be so much more.
I think it's going to be. I love the fact that they seem to be committed to it. It's not just a side project anymore for Blizzard. It really is a mainline franchise for them, which is. Sounds awesome.
We're playing vanilla WoW as far as Hearthstone is concerned.
For sure. Christian, surprising game on your playlist this week, it seems to me.
Mario Golf 3DS. That's the surprise. Yeah. I took the plunge, so OG.
Because you hate Nintendo.
I do. And if there's nothing I hate more than well-made games from quality franchises that I grew up with, it just makes me so mad. Target, I don't know if they still do, but they had the Abomination of the Week several weeks ago. They had the 2DS on sale for $99, and a $99 2DS meant not fighting over a shared 3DS anymore.
That's one fewer DS, though.
It is. I never used 3. I know you kind of liked 3D, like in Zelda and in Mario. I never had the 3D on in my 3DS. I would have loved to have an XL, but I couldn't justify that. Maybe after E3 there'll be some cool announcement, but $99, I was already at Target. My wife won't notice anyway because it's a Target bill on the credit card statement, you know what I mean? It could have been diapers.
Well done.
That's why you never buy video games at GameStop.
That's what the TS stands for, honey. Diaper supply.
Yeah, they don't itemize on your credit card receipt. It just says Target $140. Oh, yep, that was groceries and some underwear. don't do that, guys. Lying about finances is a surefire way to have your relationship fail. But $99 was that price point where I was like, this is great. And the 2DS is ergonomically, I think, a great system. It's not very portable, but it sits on my nightstand now, which is great. And I've been playing the crap out of Mario Golf. And it's really good. What I find interesting about Mario Golf is, you know, their course designers, I think they always make good golf courses. The golf is fun to play. The mechanics are there. It hasn't changed much from, you know, probably Mario Golf on Game Boy way back when, right? I've been playing Mario Golf for forever. But they're always really sound games. But to me, what makes it more fun, than some of the great games that are available, you know, like Hot Shots or things I could be playing on my Vita or any other console, numerous other consoles, or even iOS has decent versions of these types of golf games. There is, for me, something comforting about playing in the Mario universe. Like, that's where, for me, Nintendo nostalgia works. I enjoy being there. I enjoy walking around the castle. I enjoy seeing Mario's face. Like, it's kind of like coming home. And the game is quality. The game is, it's a quality game of golf. It hasn't changed much from any other prior version you've played, but it's a well-made, really good game. And to me, it's that warm blanket version of those games. Whereas Hot Shots Golf, to me, doesn't have any memorable characters. I'm not like, oh, I'm going to play as, you know, Freddie Pink or whatever their names are. I don't even know, because whatever. In Mario, I know that, you know, Bowser's going to hit it far but have a narrow window for accuracy and manual aim, and Mario's kind of your all-around good guy, and Yoshi's really safe and easy but doesn't hit it as far, and there's that comfort level in this game. And it's cool. I mean, I'm having a great time with it. I think the tournaments are really cool, where you basically, you know, Nintendo will have some out, or you can create some with friends, and you have a code. Of course, it's a like a 20-digit code you have to enter. But you can create a custom tournament, and your friends can all come in and play, but you're not playing at the same time, right? Like, I play the 18 holes, and it registers my score, and then this tournament is open for a week. So, Jeff, you can come in and play and get your score, and we can compare. And it's a fun way to do multiplayer on a handheld, I think. You know, it's kind of like a leaderboardy type thing, but I know you're playing the same holes in the same order as I am, with the same rule set. And it's a really sound game of golf. It's not as RPG as what I think the best Mario Golf on the Game Boy Advance was. This version isn't quite as RPG in terms of leveling your guy up, but there's fun unlocks and outfits and coins and things that keep that single player progression entertaining. And I was telling this to a friend, where it's like, the biggest problem with the game is, while it looks great, when you fire it up, to me, you don't think it looks great. Because to me, the problem Nintendo games have is each new Nintendo game that comes out looks like how you remember the last one looking, if that makes sense. I'm like Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, looks fantastic. Which is what I've been playing this week. That way at all.
Oh, it doesn't?
Because I feel like, oh my gosh, no.
I watch videos and I'm like, that looks like Mario 64, until you fire up Mario 64 today and you're like, oh, wait, Mario 64 looked busted.
I feel like it looks palpably gorgeous. It's quite stunning, you know, and it's you know, I guess it's a little sad to say, hey, HD version of Mario Kart in 2014 is like, wow, but it really pops, you know, the color and the movement and the frame rate. It's really fun. And a lot of the stuff you were saying about Mario Golf, I echo with Mario Kart. It's like being inside that Mario world where everything makes sense and you get stuff is tons of fun. This is a fantastic version of Mario Kart. Some of the stuff that I've been harping on for months is a little unfair now that I realize I actually have the game. When I was talking about using just the game pad as a big horn, yes, it does that, but you can also select another view so you can see like the course and your track your positioning on the course through that. So you can select from like two or three different displays on there, although one of them is a big horn. But the game is tons of fun. You know, I'm not a big racing fan, but Mario Kart is more my speed because it's more about
Mario Kart's power. Yeah, it's not racing. I mean, it is, but yeah, it is. It's not Forza. It's not. You don't need to know your line in the same way.
No, but I think the thing about racing that I'm not super into is the progression. Is like race the match to get to the next match, to get to the next course, to unlock the next tires for my thing. Like, I don't care about tires for my thing. Although the different, you know, CC levels of the carts and the different add-ons are really quite fun because of how whimsical they are. You know, the parachutes and the flying stuff in this version, and the anti-grav wheels when you're like going up the side of the walls and stuff. It's really fun. It's a solid Mario Kart. If you like Mario Kart at all, or if you own a Wii U, this is a must buy. I mean, it's fantastic.
That nostalgia is so huge, because I didn't grow up being into cars. I wasn't one of the guys that was into planes and cars and army. I was into comics and Superman and, you know, video games. So we, you know, that nostalgia is so true. we bought a house here in Seattle in October, and my brother and my sister-in-law were visiting. The whole house was full the first week we were here, and then everyone left. My wife went on a business trip, and I was alone, and I freaked out. I had
What's that sound?
Well, not only that, but not just like, what is that sound? But like, what the hell did I do? I just bought a house. We're going to be crushed under this mortgage. This is my second house, but we're in a brand, you know, and I've been here for 4 years, but it's like, in Dallas, you buy a house, it's $127,000.
And you know, in Dallas, they buy you a house.
They give you a house. They're like, thank you. Hey, welcome to Texas. Here's a steak and a smile on the house.
Did you say a steak on the house?
I said a steak and a house. Here's a snake, a steak, and a house. No. But I was having panic attacks. Like, just like, oh my God, what have I done? And that's when I downloaded Mario 3D World, and it made it all better. Like, it just, I would draw cartoons all day, comics all day. I'd work all day. And then I would just sit on the couch and put that on, and it would just wash over me, and I felt safe. As dumb as that sounds. And then
that's awesome.
When I started to run out of levels, I was still a couple of days before my wife came home, and I was having panic attacks. Like, I'm going to be out of Mario and I don't know what to do. And there was the space level and I was like, I have one more, but I'm so sad that it's done. Like I'm very excited about Mario Kart because
you'll love it.
I'm playing the golf as well. It's just, it's so nice to be, I played, the RPG. It was the first Mario RPG I ever played. The Luigi Dream one.
Yeah.
Great game. Lots of fun. I don't know if I would have cared for it so much if it wasn't the Mario World, though.
Right. Yeah, it relies on that. Yeah. As do all these games, but, you know, that as is their right. And think of how cool it will be when you'll be able to have your little Mario figurine and you'll level him up in Mario Kart and then take him into your Mario RPG and level him up and then take him into the... I think that's happening, guys. I think it's happening.
I wanted to know, I feel like the biggest knock against this Mario Kart is... there's no real battle mode. Is that right? You're just on like full, you're battling it out on, are you also racing on the tracks? Like, can you win by completing the race or is there no lap counter, but you're just going around in circles? Like, how does battle work on Mario?
You know,
Kart 8?
To be honest with you, I haven't even delved into battle mode yet. I've just been playing the Grand Prix and opening up tracks. You'll have to come over. You should come over and we'll play some couch co-op. Cause I think you'd dig this.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about it. I'll also talk more about Super Time Force, which I've played, which is breaking my brains. But I want to jump to the phones before we get to tabletop time and see what somebody else has got on their playlist. 567 area code, you are on. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, my name is Devin. I'm from Jackson, Michigan. And lately, I've just been playing a lot of Dota 2. Not a huge MOBA fan, but the International just broke, I believe, $6 million for
craziness
winnings based on like $10 compendium sales. And that's only like a fourth of the total amount that they've gathered up. So, excuse me, just been playing a lot of Dota and trying a little bit of League of Legends. Really excited for Heroes of the Storm. Watching a lot of tournaments. It's a lot of fun. I'm a player, a sucky player, but still a fun game.
Yeah, it's great. And this International is really opening up so much of the game. It's really, you know, we talked about COD being part of the X Games, but it feels like we don't need esports to be part of the X Games because esports are trouncing actual sports. When you have a $6 million prize pool, I'm going to ask you this question. Is your love of Dota... is it comparable to watching sports? Do you watch things in these tournaments and then go and attempt them in real life? What is your experience playing?
Well, I've got about 160 hours into it. It took me my first year to get the first 40 hours. And over the past couple months, I've been basically attempting a lot of these plays. The meta game rather is in a constant flux, and there's always new patches and hero updates. So heroes that were really popular last year are much more popular this year, or vice versa. They also just came out with Free to Play, that movie, so that you see a lot of things that you just would never think of even doing. I mean, if I could step on the basketball court and try all day long to get a slam dunk or something, or throw a 80-yard pass, but there's really just no chance of that happening. However, you know, sitting down, playing the game, trying to replicate a pledge chain hook or just one of the crazy moves you see at these international tournaments, it's a little bit more within the realm of possibility, I guess.
That is such a great analogy. And, you know, I think my experience in the last month or so with Dark Souls has really warmed me to the idea of jumping into Dota. I was talking to somebody recently who said that he was willing to be my my Jedi Master, like Dan was for Dark Souls, for Dota. And I think I've warmed to this idea. And I think where I am in my headspace is much more interested in these deeper video game experiences, that instead of having such a shallow, broad experience of sort of trying to play everything, of really invest, and Hearthstone contributes to this as well, investing in a game and really getting to know it inside and out. And I think I might be ready to delve into the world of Dota. It's certainly seeing the fervor around the international, or what's it called, the international? Anyway, seeing the fervor around all the streaming events and how much people love it, it makes me want to be part of that world.
Have you not played any MOBAs yet?
I have played a bunch of MOBAs, but I've never taken the time to learn the big two, you know, Dota or League of Legends. I've been excited about Heroes of the Storm because it seems like a beginner entry level version. And I played a bunch of the Lords of Middle Earth, or what is it called,
I know
it. Version,
the Lord of the Rings. I think it's called Forgettable MOBA. Is that what it's?
Well, oh, boo.
It was, and I played Smite, and I played others, but I haven't gotten into the big two because I've been kind of intimidated. But I was also intimidated by Dark Souls, and have learned to love that. So I don't know. I think I'm more ready than I've ever been.
You're gonna love Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah,
because what Heroes of the Storm is to MOBAs, what Hearthstone is to Magic.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard the exact same thing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I tend to be just, I think, because I'm an artist and a cartoonist, I tend to be swayed by the art a lot. And I love the character design of League of Legends more than Dota. As dumb as that sounds, that sways me. So, I've put in a ton of time into League of Legends, and it's a blast, man. Especially when you find a champion that you love and you start to learn, You certainly don't have to pull off anything that you'll see in these professional competitions, but when you pull something off and either your buddies that are teammates, or even more so if someone from a pug tells you good job.
Yeah.
It's like, "Whoa!"
Right.
It's awesome.
I'm going to jump in. I'm going to do it. And this episode's been so fun. We're kind of running low on time, so I definitely want to get to tabletop time. But I caught him off guard.
Tabletop time.
There it is. Tabletop time.
Right now.
Time. All right, Scott, one of the biggest things I was excited about to have you on the show was to talk about D&D. We hit on it a little bit with the WotC news, but I mean, I think in this idea of stories of glories or tales of fails, you know, I would love for you to tell me what your D&D Next experience has been like. Like what's going on in your game? Like, you know, what's your week to week experience?
I'm playing with a bunch of my friends. We go up to the Penny Arcade offices every once a week and play up there. So it's one of my buddies that actually works at Penny Arcade. And then I'm very blessed, okay, because when I play with Acquisitions Incorporated, I get Chris Perkins as a DM.
Right.
My regular game, I have another WotC employee as a DM, so I'm breathing rarefied air. I understand that. But D&D always comes down to, and you know, any RPG is this way too. I mean, it's really about the people that you're playing with and everyone's ability to get over the fear of messing up, or, you know, that social anxiety, and just going for it. Because and this is a big theme of my comic Table Titans, and that
which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I love it.
I know that we always say we have a mutual admiration society, but when you dig something that I like, it freaks me out. It's just so many years of Totally Rad Show that you even know it and care. It just
it's so good. If anybody is not reading, I mean, I like PvP, but Table Titans for me is like it is the jam, because it's so smart and so funny and so exactly kind of my experience, and it melds the fantasy world and the real world in such a fun way. I love it.
Yeah, our main character in Table Titans, Val, who plays a character called Val, the big theme of the book is that given enough time, memories that you make kind of get the little details kind of get nicked off, like a rock in a rock polisher, right? Mm-hmm. This hard rock, you put it in the rock polisher and first big chunks of it get off, and then it starts to smooth out, and then it's this perfect smooth little thing. And so when you experience something in real life, over the years it gets polished and embellished, and then it becomes this perfect little memory. And the theme of Table Titans is when you play Dungeons and Dragons and you have something awesome that happens at the table, if you give it enough time, that memory is indistinguishable from something that happened in real life. And I really do think there's some truth to that. And I think that is the best part of any tabletop RPG is the memories that you make. And when you have a moment when you're sitting down with your buddies and you're like, remember that time?
Yeah.
And it's and the thing that follows is something that happened in a game.
Yeah, we were in this dungeon. It's like, no, yeah. You weren't, but you were.
Yeah. So, Wizards has their stuff that they release, and right now we're playing through their current kind of campaign called The Tyranny of Dragons. And so, yeah, there's a bigger story here that they've put together. There's this dragon cult and these wizards of Thay, and they're trying to resurrect Tiamat from this prison, and you know, you as the players have to stop it. And when you play your game, you're playing a little part of this bigger picture. And that's fun. And it's nice to have it as a backdrop. But what's exciting is a couple weeks ago, our cleric, who is a dwarf named, I think his name was Bucket Cumberbunt Brumble.
as one is.
He decided, since he was a lightning cleric, and we were up against a lightning dragon, that he could negotiate with this lightning dragon, and he was killed. And every time we sit down with this player, who now has a new character, who is a druid, who's into spores and funguses, and his name is Spore, we can't stop harassing him about, now don't stop and talk to this dragon. And so, you know, again, I think that it all comes down for me to, it doesn't necessarily matter what edition you're playing, what game rule you're playing. It all comes down to the stories that you're telling. It's this collaborative storytelling, and in a couple years, the memory of what you guys did, in quotes, is as real as any other thing you've experienced. Yeah. So the idea that again, just like with the Mario world, I'm very comforted by the world of D&D, and the lore and the nostalgia of it. So with D&D Next kind of harkening back to the earlier days of D&D, where things are a little more dangerous, and wizards have three spells, and, you know, warriors have,
right.
You know, it's, for a guy in his 40s who grew up on D&D, I'm thrilled.
I also would say that one of my favorite things about watching Acquisitions, and you in particular, because you're so funny, man. You make me laugh out loud so often watching those. And I love the message that is sending to people that may have sort of a misconception about D&D and what it is, that it has to be this weird you know, everybody's talking in voices and wearing silly clothes and it's embarrassing and everybody has to take it super seriously, that there's an irreverence that's true with the group that I play with as well. But that you guys are kind of putting that out into the world and showing that you can be tongue in cheek at the same time that you're playing. And it's all about the tone of your friendship, even, you know, it's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have one of the guys that we're playing with. He goes to Burning Man every year. His name's Sean. He's just the funnest guy in the whole world. And he is playing this little gnome mage, and his maximum distance to cast a spell is 30 feet. And so he's constantly asking the DM, how far away is he? And he's like, well, 20 feet, 50 feet. And then he goes, that's under 30. And there's no reason in the game world that a gnome would say, that's under 30, but it's become his catchphrase. And so,
awesome.
Yeah, and we were at we went to a pub before our last game, and we made a joke about the under 30 rule at the pub. So I mean, when it spills out, and that's a thing, you know, we've gotten the girls to play a couple times, and especially with the wives, they're very reluctant to play because they're worried they can't role play. And really, it can be whatever you bring to the table is fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, if you'd rather be quiet about it, be quiet about it. If you just want to never talk, your character never talks and is very mysterious.
I have a great story from actually last week, because I've been DMing this group of guys, and it's all the TRS guys and some others. And Mike Gaines, our old shooter, editor, wizard behind the scenes, he's playing a ranger in the game. And there was a situation where there was this big tower and this narrow bridge leading up to the tower. And the characters knew there were some bad guys in the tower. And he was really the only guy that had any kind of sneak ability or stealth ability. So they said, you know, why don't you go ahead, sneak up to the door and see if the bad guys are there. So he sneaks up to the door. He knocks on the door, and I open the door, you know, as the bad guys in the door, and I say, who inquires? And he just said it politely, goes, it's me, Baznar. Just wondering if anybody was home. And he was so nice that I decided to just go with it, and I invited him in. And so we walked into another part of the house and had a private conversation. And in the other room, everybody is like, did he just go inside? What's going on?
Yeah.
He's being really nice to them. And he comes back out later, and we had a really pleasant conversation. He asked if he could have safe passage through, and I was like, oh, he's being really nice, so I'm going to let him go. And so he goes back, and he's like, yeah, they said we could walk through there. And they're like, we don't have to kill them? He's like, no, that's fine. And it was just the most wonderful moment, because he doesn't have a lot of experience playing these games, and he just behaved in a way that was totally in character with himself, of like,
right,
I'm just going to be a nice guy.
Credit to you as a good DM. You rolled with it, and you gave him an accomplishment.
Right.
And the rest of the table is like, what? What is happening?
Yeah.
And it's just a wonderful – so I had a new player, first-time player, and she said, I want to be the cleric. And I go, all right, you know, your job will be to heal everybody. And she goes, can I be an evil cleric? I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, what if I hate healing people? What if I was raised in a church and they were mean to me and I don't like that I'm a cleric? I said, you know what? Let's go for it. And it was a frustrating first half of the game, because she didn't want to heal anybody.
Can I get a heal?
The healer. And she was like, you need to stop getting hit. Like, you're not playing good enough. So we walk into a different part of the dungeon, and there were kobolds that had prisoners. And she cast a spell on the kobold and made it a necromancy spell, and just disintegrated it. And someone goes, that's necromancy. What kind of cleric are you? And I said, what do you say? And she goes, I walk out of the room, and everyone at the table fell out of their chairs. I mean, they just didn't know what to do. But the first half of the game, someone stopped me during a break and said, you need to talk to, you know, Abby. She's not playing the game right. I go, she's playing the game fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the heart of any of these RPGs. And
that's what separates them from video games. That's what makes it a demonstrably different experience than video games, is there can be a completely outside of the box interpretation of what's going on. And it can be incorporated into the story. It can be dealt with by the group. And that's what I always try to encourage with the guys I'm playing with, is like, don't approach this like a video game. Don't walk up to the guy, learn what you need to do, and go do it. Like, maybe you should question whether that guy needs to give you that quest or not. You know, it's we're so ingrained in us to sort of play Simon Says with video games that the opportunity to play this ongoing improvisation is what makes that special.
Yeah, in video games, figuring out the math, as I like to call it all the time, and learning the way to win is a benefit. In tabletop gaming, the guy that does that is not welcome at the table. He's called a min-maxer, and no one likes him.
Right.
You know, they're called munchkins. They don't, it's discouraged at the table. So, and I try not to, as a DM, if a person wants to be a min-maxer, I think that translates into the gaming world as someone who's very obsessed about, you know, what they do. But they should be treated accordingly. I don't know. I feel we're in the first half of this show where I felt a little like I wasn't going to be able to contribute. Now I feel like we're leaving
it tends to happen at this point in the show, but we're actually running up against
time. I have a name, and my name is Christian, and I'm here.
He's a lawyer.
Christian Scott.
It's Christian. Nice to meet you, Scott Christian. No, this is fascinating. Anyway, back to Twitter.
Well, we can leave it there. I also played Marvel Dice Masters for the first time this week, but we don't really have time to go into that. But I will talk about that next week. I'm really excited. I think, I don't know if Scott, if you had a chance to play it, but I think you would love it.
I'll have to give it a shot. I have not tried it yet.
Oh man, it's basically Magic meets Quarriors, but with Marvel characters. But we'll talk about it next week because we're kind of running out of time. But man, this has been a really fun show. I would love to have you back, Scott. You're always fun to talk to, and I really appreciate you taking time to do the show.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime you need me. And I want to have you and Christian on our show, Surviving Creativity.
Anytime. Where can people find that show and other bits of your work this week?
Well, I'll do my plugs. PvPonline.com is where you can see my staple webcomic. I've been doing it for 16 years now, as of this month. May 4th was our 16th year anniversary. Table Titans is my sophomore comic. It's only a year and a little bit old, but we were just discussing it. It's at tabletitans.com. And I do a podcast with two of my buddies about the world of new media and making a living doing stuff like Jeff does and Christian does and I do, where we create things that you guys can enjoy. And it's called Surviving Creativity. And you can see that at Surviving – listen to it at survivingcreativity.com.
Cool beans. Christian, what's going on with you this week?
New episode of What's New, my Nerdist stand-up podcast, dropped today. It's a monthly podcast and a monthly live show. The next live show is, I believe, Tuesday, June 17th. But this past Tuesday's show is now out on podcast form. You can find that if you just search What's New with Christian Spicer. It's on iTunes and wherever you find it. And what I wanted to say to people, one, thank you to everyone who has reviewed this show and told a friend about it. That's awesome. And I know Jeff and I, we really appreciate it. And the second thing, I know the school year is coming to a close, but if anyone here, people often hit me up like, hey, when are you going to be in Madison or Austin or whatever. The answer is always, I'd love to, and it's when I'm booked there or have a reason to go there. And so I don't know how many people that listen to this show are in college, but if you are and you will be next year and you would like Jeff and I to come out there, let us know. Like, we have a live show we've done here in Los Angeles, and we have different versions of live shows that we've taken on the road, and we would love nothing more than if schedules allow to take the show to you guys and do it at your school or, you know, wherever. Have show, will travel. I really love that idea. It's one of my favorite things in terms of stand-up is working the road. And I think, you know, Jeff and I have so much fun doing live shows that I'm going to say it publicly on this show as a way to force him to do them with me.
Oh, I want to. I'm excited. Yeah, we've been talking about this for a long time. And yes, you can help make it happen. We'd love to hear from you about that stuff as well.
Yeah.
And big announcement, it's official. I teased it last week, but we are doing daily shows E3 week, daily DLC episodes live. You can call in, talk about all the exciting stuff from E3. I know we've had so much to talk about ourselves these last few weeks that I haven't been able to get to too many calls, but I love the idea that, you know, these big press conferences, these big showings, Chris and I are going to be there at E3. And I'd love to hear from you guys what you want to talk about. You can call in. So we're going to be doing those every evening of E3 week. The first one probably would be pretty late because the Sony press conference starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So well, I have to get home from that before we can start recording. And get drunker is what you meant to say. But I'm really, really excited. We'll be doing daily episodes. The folks at 5x5 have been awesome about making that happen. So I'm really, really, really excited. Also really excited about my audiobook debuting. It's called Traveling in Space. It's on audible.com right now. You can listen to it. It should be up on iTunes and Amazon before next week's episode starts. So I'm super proud of this. It's a really great, well-written book by Stephen Leva, who's a really fun, brilliant sci-fi author. I'm proud of the work that I did. It's like 30 or 40 different voices of these alien creatures that visit Earth for the first time. It's a first contact novel from the perspective of the aliens. So it's pretty awesome. And the deal is the aliens are the next level of evolution. So they're like the most beautiful people you could ever. It's funny. It's a very funny, fun, smart book. So check that out. Also check out my YouTube, Kanata Jeff. It's the youtube.com/Kanata Jeff. And hang out with us every Monday, 11 a.m. We record live here on 5x5. And thanks for hanging out with us this week. It was a lot of fun. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.